What's up, everyone, and welcome to the Elevate Experience,
the podcast about overcoming struggles and adversity and how that relates to addiction, recovery, and health. I am your host and the CEO of Elevate Addiction Services, Angie Manson.
And I'm Dallas Terrell, co-host and life intervention counselor at Elevate. Thank you so much for joining us, and let's jump right in.
Hey, everyone, welcome back to the show. We have a very special guest today. His name is Rob Hanley from Recovery Today. Rob was introduced to addiction well before taking his first drink. His father had issues with gambling, his sister was a heroin addict, and his brother also struggled with substance abuse. Rob says he experienced many of the consequences addicts do before finding sobriety, but that things never got very dark. As a successful businessman and entrepreneur, it became clear that alcohol no longer served him, and he got sober in the spring of 1994. In 2012, Rob started a free online publication called Recovery Today magazine. The magazine has featured the recovery stories of well-known celebrities such as Russell Brand, Daryl Strawberry, and Jamie Lee Curtis. Rob says he found a lot of purpose in working on the magazine and shedding light on stories that bring hope to those who need it. And then here's a quote. When you can help somebody save their life, it resonates really deeply.
Nice.
Welcome so much to the show, Rob. It's so great to have you, man. Thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks so much. As you can tell from the interview, I'm kind of a chatty person, so.
Hey, all good. So are we.
Yeah, we're super chatty. I recognize that date. That's exactly when I went into treatment and have been here ever since as well. So we have the same exact recovery time, which is interesting.
Nice.
Very cool. Yeah.
It's a little while, you know.
Yeah, it ages us a little bit, you know, but it also gives us a little cred. I mean, it's 26 years now.
Yeah, It does give a little cred.
That's right.
Hey, you know,
that's what I'm learning to own
up. Though, if you got 26 days, it's a big thing though, too, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah, we'll take it. Yeah, we'll take it. I was just gonna say too, Rob. I've definitely listened, but I've been subscribed to the magazine for a while, the Recovery Today magazine. I just love that you put out a magazine that is available for people in recovery, because I feel like for recovery, we need to just be immersed in resources. So I'm so glad that there's that different angle now, the magazine and the multimedia. So I just kind of really wanted to acknowledge you for putting that out there and shedding hope on people. Like the message that you put out there is landing and it's real. And I just want to commend you for that. So thank you so much for doing that and for being on the show.
It's far from me. It's far from me. Like, I'm just a guy that's not a therapist. You know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not an expert. I haven't written a book on addiction or anything like that. You know, like Angie was saying, like, it's been 26 years. But it's far from me. I have had the good fortune and being blessed, number one, by my brother that provided everything that made this possible, funding and even a studio initially. I mean, everything to make this would never have happened without him. But I've had the good fortune for every single person that has become our family. And I don't really like to use that word so much. People, I think, throw that around so much that we're family. But I really feel that way. I've made some really close and intimate friendships with our contributors. You know, Jennifer Jimenez and Tim Ryan and Donna Spear. And, you know, I probably shouldn't do that because I'll forget people. Brandon Holt, Tammy Lally. I mean, there's been so many people that contacted me, you know, over the years and said, God, I just love this. Like, I want to help or I want to do something. I want to contribute. And my thought was always, our editor, Sherry, it was been our editor, Sherry Gaba, by the way, was the first person that said, I want to help. Like, she was enthusiastic, so instrumental. It wouldn't have happened. It's far from just me. I'm kind of the central hub to put everything together and to make it all happen, but it's very much a team effort.
What I love about it is it makes it, it humanizes it and makes it cool to be sober. So like for myself growing up, huge Nikki Sixx fan. And obviously I got sober before Nikki, but when he got sober, it made it like, I think, cool. He's not your typical rock star. It's actually okay to be sober and be a rock star. So I love how you take different people from different sectors, like Russell Brand, like the, you know, all the different athletes you interview, and really humanize them. And I think that is really what helps people who are just average people looking at these people they've admired their whole lives going, if they can do it, heck yeah, I can do it. Because I can only imagine how hard it is to stay sober on a road or all these different places where you have all these memories of using, but now you're doing it sober. And if they can do it, well, yeah, your average person could definitely do it.
If you can be a rock star and have jillions of dollars and be in a genre where I actually don't think it is this way now. You know, we interview rock stars pretty frequently. I actually interviewed one today, this afternoon, as a matter of fact. And I have come to understand, like, it really isn't the drug. You know, I used to think that just everybody's, you know, trying to hand you some blow or whatever it is. And they said, really, no, it's not like people drinking smoothies and stuff like that. Like, there's really a big sober vibe. But my opinion has always been like, man, when you're a rock star, you got groupies, you're trashing, you know, I'm probably stuck in the 80s, you know, you're trashing hotel rooms, there's freaking lines, there's eight balls on the table, you know, and you're not even the news at all that, you know, the cops come in and bust you with an eight ball and three hookers and you're naked and wasted out of your mind. It's not even the news because everybody expects that. So I agree. If somebody like that, you think, wow, if that guy can be, then, you know, I can. So, yeah. And I'm grateful coming out and speaking.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I think they maybe people like Nikki changed that whole culture because, you start seeing guys, they're not all sucked up anymore. They got guns. People are actually, now that's the cool thing is to actually be healthy and take care of yourself. And it's making sober not such an odd thing. It's like a very cool thing to be part of.
It really is. I think that they're making it, it's cool to be sober. You know, it's cool to be sober.
Yeah, because like at the end of the day, anyone can be effed up. It's much harder to be sober.
Yeah, like facing reality, that's scary shit, you know?
Yeah, that's the big one. Stuff people say.
Exactly.
That's the harder route. Yeah, absolutely. So Rob, how long has the magazine been in place? How long ago did you guys start that?
Sure. So we're in the process right now of doing our 70th monthly issue. I actually had to divide 70 by 12 the other day. And so that's like 6.8 years or something like that. It was kind of funny. We published our first issue in like July of 2013, I think, which the math now doesn't really work. And I couldn't even believe, I think it was 18 pages. And, I couldn't believe how amazing it looked, actually, how it came out. Like, I'm like, oh my God. Like, my first thought was, this looks like a real magazine. And that was, you know, how funny it was to actually create this. And then it looks like a real, when we got it back from design. And so we've gone now from 80 pages to about somewhere between, on the low side, I'd say probably like 39 pages to maybe we've had as high as like 75 or 76. Sometimes you get a little lost. There's more content comes in or there's things we want to include. And, but from the first issue to the second issue was like 6 months. Like we did it. And then it was like, okay, well, shoot, how do we do that again? And there really wasn't an expectation, but since then it's been, you know, monthly for all that time.
Wow. Yeah, there you go. We actually just recently interviewed, Donna Spear on the podcast too. So that
she's was awesome. Awesome.
Dude, she's a legend.
Yep.
She's so funny. We were laughing the whole time and I felt like when she was talking, I was just like listening. I was like, yes, yep, yep, absolutely.
Yeah, you wouldn't know it. Actually, it was funny when I interviewed her, when I met her and interviewed her, you know, I knew that she had been a Playboy Playmate, you know, model and everything like that. And I have a really bizarre memory for dates and times and what I was doing. And as I was looking up, like for the feature, I was looking up, you know, I wanted to find her old cover and stuff like that. And I saw her cover and like instantly I was transported back to like, you know, 1984. It's really funny. Actually, I remembered, I'll just recite it now what I had saw. It was like, we were getting ready to go out to Dime Beer. I was in college. It was Friday night and they had Dime Beer, you know? And I was waiting for my friend to get ready. And in his dorm room, he had a Playboy. And I thought, oh my God, like that's the most beautiful woman I've ever freaking seen. How could there be, you know? So probably it burned into my brain. But knowing, learning, becoming friends with her, she is incredibly intelligent. And she has this guided missile intuition where she will ask you like a very direct question. So after our feature, we kind of started to become friends. And she asked me, we were talking one time, she started asking me like these missile drop kind of questions.
Yeah.
And so I was like, all right, like you want to know the real answer? Here it is. Here it is. So she's not only become a friend, she's become one of my most trusted friends and advisors and a kind of a mentor and a coach in some kind of in ways. So I'm really, you know, I just think she's the greatest.
She is. And we love talking with her. Her story is absolutely amazing and very timely. And yeah, it was a big honor to be able to speak with her. And again, you know, how fortunate for you and us, you know, she was one of the first people of her caliber that we've talked to. And it's hard to necessarily, and you, maybe you go through this, be a podcaster when, like Dal said, you're so enthralled in the story. You're just like, And it's just, you just want them to talk and you're not really contributing because they're just super amazing. And
I never feel that way. I actually always feel like my downfall a little bit. My wife is like, well, not my wife. Everybody's like, that knows me. They're like, dude, you can talk. Like if I meet somebody that talks more than me, it's pretty rare. And especially I have some friends that talk about as much, and God, it's like the phone will ring and it's like, I really don't have an hour to burn. Cause that's like really simple. But I always feel like my passion is to make these connections. And so they'll start saying things and it just lights my brain up. And I want so badly to get information back out, you know? So.
I love it. So I want to sort of segue right now to just because of the times we're in and what's been happening, how difficult has sheltering in place been for you? I know we've had other guests on the show who've been very strictly sheltered in place due to where they live or what they do. And we are just seeing on our end from the rehab angle, the havoc that it is creating on individuals and their mental health. People maybe who never even had problems have problems now. And it's just affecting people in so many negative ways.
So, you know, we have PTSD. Of course, everybody knows PTSD. I have PFS, and which is a phrase that I will take full credit for. Usually I'll say I saw that or heard that. I have pandemic fatigue syndrome. Pandemic fatigue syndrome means I'm over this shit. Like, enough already. Let's move on. Okay. So how has it been to me for me personally is for me staying sober is really not a thing in the least, actually. I have so much reinvented my who I am really from the very beginning. Like, it's not something I struggle with. I don't even think about it. And, but the challenge for me is hope and optimism. And, to be real, I mean, everybody likes to be real on the, podcast or an interview is I've always wondered, or for many years, I've wondered, why do I have to work so hard just to not be unhappy? Okay. So I don't think that's everybody's disposition, but I kind of started to realize maybe it's my disposition. Like, I have to do work to actually go to the gym and do things and to just try to feel okay. So isolating and the whole backdrop of everybody wearing their mask and doing all this kind of stuff like that is very, very freaky. For me personally, it's been very difficult. It's been really, really, really difficult, honestly. But this isn't about me, although we might be interviewing. I just try to think of myself as an advocate for what I see and what I know that's out there. And we know statistically, like, overdoses are through the roof. Suicides are through the roof. One thing that is actually not talked about very much that it just angers me to the core is child abuse. Now, you know, we're in a recovery magazine, but the facts are, from one of my other friends that we interviewed, her name is Kelly Gunter, and her story was that, you know, back in non-shutdown times, that she said she was raped. She didn't say molested, she said raped. Every day from the time that she was 7 years old until she was 14, and by her older brothers. So child abuse that happens at home is normally picked up by teachers. You know, they observe, sweetheart, you don't seem okay. What's that mark? You know, things like that. Now we have locked up the abusers and the abused together, and the abusers are already crazy, right? So it really brings out a lot. You know, I'm very much an advocate, like, open it back up, do it safely, protect those that are vulnerable, open up. So as you can tell, it brings out something I'm very passionate about with, as I said, being a sufferer of PFS.
Yeah. I think you should trademark that before anybody else takes it.
Maybe I think I will. Pandemic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah. Well, and you're 100% right. It's really difficult to think of those things going on and nobody there to save or help these kids. It is really hard. I, for myself, I'm so grateful. My kids are like grown, literally, you know, my son went to college in September and thankfully so, because I just have so much empathy for families and kids and that are going through this right now and how much they're sacrificing because of it.
Yeah. It's been hard on everybody. I try to look a little bit at the, you know, the silver lining and, in everything that I do, and kind of I'm brought back to, you know, the serenity prayer is, you know, a lot of times I will vacillate between being really angry about things, feeling hopeless about things, and then understanding like, okay, a lot of these things are not in my control at all. So I got to just let it go and understand like, okay, I've got different parameters now to operate in. And some things I can operate, you know, sometimes I have to just abide by that and just accept the way that it is. So
That's funny you say that. That's actually one part of our program that we have to teach our clients. Well, we don't have to, but we do, which is radical acceptance, because you can't, you know, be so upset over stuff that you can't change. And especially with addiction and getting sober and what people are having to confront when they go back out into the world, there's got to be a lot of that continual work on accepting it is what it is.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah, super true. I think what I heard too, Rob, is you just have to reframe it in your mind a little bit. You got to find something positive. I'm sure we could just pick apart all the negative of the situation, but, you know, especially people in recovery, to what point does that serve us to just live in that negativity and live in the darkness? And like you were saying, you know, someone that maybe identified as like historically unhappy, and we got to work to be happy. And that was kind of my next question, is what has been successful or helpful for you to kind of get out of the darkness or to step away from the pandemic fatigue syndrome?
Yeah, sure. 100, man. So I've got a lot of little secrets. I got a lot of little formulas, I guess. So I'll just share in the hope that there's somebody else that's out there. Like I said, I mean, you know, sobriety is really easy for me. The harder part has been since my 20s. In my early 20s, you know, I remember it was one Christmas vacation. I was in college and I'd always work during vacation. And I was getting ready one morning, used to do construction, and I had this overwhelming sadness, and I had no idea why I was sad. You know, like, it was the first time I had experienced depression, and I had no idea like what it was, like, why am I so, you know, why do I feel so profoundly sad? That was way back in my 20s. So I've kind of become a student of this quite a bit. And that's really where most of my passion is. And it's a co-occurring disorder, of course, with addiction. And the hardest part, or what I have discovered, what works for me the best, is very simple things. I love a guy named Johan Hari. We interviewed him. He's great. He's suffers depression. Also, there is, I think it's a YouTube by a guy named, I think it's, his name is Admiral Rickover, I think is what it was. He wrote a book called Make Your Bed. So there's a principle, first of all, that in Recovery Today magazine, we purposely, when we were going to describe what is Recovery Today magazine, I really gave it a lot of thought about, like, what is it and what are we going to describe it as? And so we didn't just throw it out there. It was extremely intentional to say Recovery Today magazine is a magazine of hope. And the reason why is, being someone that has suffered profound depression, is I realized it's not about motivation or anything like that. It's actually the cornerstone of everything is like, fuck, like, can things be better someday? And so we have to have some kind of ability to hope. And so what I have learned from things like Admiral Rickover and things I've studied is that we release dopamine in our brains when goals are accomplished. And so I also, you know, I don't like to label myself, but I will kind of for this, is to say I'm ADD. If somebody's watching this, they'll probably say,
well,
duh, like it comes through loud and clear. And and I look at that actually as an asset, by the way, is completing tasks will release dopamine in our minds. And people that have ADD will start things, but we don't finish things. So focusing on finishing something. So what do? You start out with the smallest thing. Make your bed every single morning, okay? Like, it makes my wife happy. I feel good about doing it. You know, that's one thing. Go to the gym and sweat your ass off. You know, I love that you have a program that actually has CrossFit. How cool is that, man? Like, full functional type of stuff. Like, you need to release, and I need to release endorphins. Plus, like, you look good. You create a biofeedback loop. People respond to you differently. It feeds your self-esteem. So that's one thing. The other real key ingredient is, you know, people mix meditation and prayer. I really don't meditate very much, but I pray, and when I go through long periods of prayer, I mean, like, I might pray for an hour, you know, like I'm talking about like praying, meditate, whatever you're going to call it. Like, I take myself out of everything. The central component of prayer for me is the word thank you. So my belief is that I ask for something, it's done. And unless I'm like a kid, like asking for chocolate cake, and then there's going to be a reason why I don't get it that I'll find out later, but it's done. And then my job is just to say thank you. So a video that I discovered of a guy that said, eliminate anxiety and depression in 5 minutes. It was meditation. So for me, it's the prayer. Number two was saying thank you. Go for a walk and just repeat over and over again. Thank you, thank you, thank you. It actually is very difficult to keep a depressed state when you're expressing gratitude and you're saying thank you over and over. And then I've played around with things like cold showers before too. I think what it does is depression is a sense of loss of control. And when you do a cold shower, like, I mean, you're you know, in control. So I'll take a normal shower, you know, and then what I'll do at the end, I'll just crank it all the way over. And it's not like, I mean, people actually take real cold showers. I don't. I might stay there for 20 or 30 seconds, but it feels like, okay, I can do this. Sometimes I fast also. There's another kind of a sense of control. Like, yes, I'm hungry. I'm supposed to be hungry. I'm fasting right now. So you control the things that you can control. The things that you can't control, for me, just try to turn them over to God and remind myself, like, I don't have that. That's not under my control.
Dude, yeah, that's awesome.
That was a lot of great advice.
Yeah, I love that, because there's the physical, the emotional, the spiritual, the physical, mental. It was all there. That's huge. Yeah, and I think if, you know, to the audience that's listening, there's a lot of takeaways there. And it all worked for me.
I will tell you, it works for me. There is one thing I will add, actually, if you like.
Yeah.
Because I really enjoy talking about these kinds of things. And, you know, and if you have depression or you have, I never even knew, like, okay, you know, in an effort to help anybody, I'll just keep it 100, is I used to think about suicide, like, all day long, okay, years ago, okay? And the thing now is I can see things coming from far away, and I know that, like, going there is not a good spot. But I used to, I wondered, like, why do I think about this so much? So I actually Googled that. I had never even heard of suicidal ideation, just the over and over and over again type of thing. So I've kind of become a student out of necessity to survive. And so I've got a lot of different philosophies. One of them is you tend to think about things and how hopeless your situation is. It's kind of like being in the middle of a storm. But what you really need to do is you need to do your best to step back and observe the storm. And you can actually do it. You can look at yourself almost like you're a rat in a cage, and you're the scientist observing what's going to happen to the rat. I love stories. So I love movies and stories and things like that. And so I like to take myself out. When I remind, you got to practice, take myself out of a situation and go, okay, this thing that looks like it's bad, this is a plot twist. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this turns out for Rob in the end. So, and to know that sooner or later, it might be a day or two or something like that, the clouds are going to blow away. And in the meantime, you exercise and eat right and try to sleep and things like that. But trying to observe yourself outside yourself and seeing things kind of pass by without latching onto it and trying to freaking hold on to the storm, just taking yourself out, just going, damn, like that's a storm that's going by, man. It will for me, it gives me less and less and less anxiety.
I love that. I have to think you and I have the benefit of experience. So, you know, I've gone through that so many times with the lowest of the lows and how are we going to survive and what's going to happen? And it always reverses and it always comes back. But if I didn't have those years of experience to realize like it's going to reverse and you're going to do better than ever, I don't know that it's as easy for somebody who's never been through a lot of lows and come out of it to be able to have that same sort of perspective. I mean, I would love for them to be able to, and maybe they can with proper, well, I mean, most addiction, I think if they get sober, they have been through the low and they are coming out the other side. So maybe it is something that literally everybody can do without the 26 years of experience like that we've had, because you do the right thing and you put one foot in front of the other and it usually does always come out for the best.
It usually does come out for the best. I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. I think that things, they always seem to pan out. You know, I've struggled with fear my whole life. You know, even since I was a little kid, I would every summer I would steal my report card out of the mailbox because I was sure that I was going to flunk. You know, nobody flunks anymore now, but back, you know, when I was a little kid, like they
That's
did.
That's a whole other issue.
Yeah, you did flunk, and oh my God, I would have so much anxiety to try to like, you know, look at my report card because I was sure that I had flunked, you know, fourth grade or fifth grade or something like that. So. False evidence appearing real, right? Like it usually doesn't pan out that way.
God, that's so true. And I kind of love where this is going and what we're talking about, because I always have conversations about this. And, you know, you guys are talking about your experience, having the experience to know that things most likely are going to work out. And if we can just step out of the story and just see it objectively for like what's happening. And, you know, I have 6 years sober, so I'm definitely newer to recovery than you guys, but still been in for
That's
some
really
time.
Legit, yeah. Man. Congratulations.
Yeah, super legit.
Yeah, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And I think one of the biggest takeaways of my own recovery has been able to recognize that I am different than my own thoughts. Like being able to see that my life is maybe just a story, or being able to see that my mind is just thinking and that's what it's supposed to do. But I can step back and choose what is important about those thoughts. And so that's kind of what I was hearing both of you guys say.
Exactly, man.
Being able to take the ego out and just being able to step back a little bit, seeing what's going on, and then decide what actually is important, what actually makes sense.
Right on.
The narrative and the story is brutal.
Yeah, and finding the silver lining. It might not be what you wanted and didn't hope for, just like this pandemic, but we've had so many silver linings come out of it. Because we stayed the course and we kept helping people and we kept coming to work every day and doing what we needed to do for everybody else. And because of that, you know, we filled up. We're doing better than we've done in a really long time because so many people need help. But at the beginning of this, we wouldn't have known that. We would have thought, how the heck are we going to survive this? And the way you survive it is you go through it.
Yeah, you control what you control what you can control. And then everything else, for me, I pray about it.
I guess that's the big takeaway. It's nice when you finally realize you can control your thoughts and your mind and that you're the one in charge of the ship.
Yeah. I'm reading a great book right now that a friend of mine, shout out to my friend Charlie Smith, gave me. And it's a book by Russell Wilson. I live in Seattle, so I love the Seahawks.
There we go.
And, you know, Russell Wilson's a Hall of Fame. He'll be a first round, first name Hall of Fame. He's one of the greatest quarterbacks in history. And, but as phenomenal that he is on the field, his mind power is even more so. Like, that guy is, he's a very boring interview because he's just always so much on point. He's so disciplined. So the book is called, it's by his mental coach named Trevor Moad. The book is called It Takes What It Takes. So it's very sports kind of thing, but I love personal development and human potential. And I was reading this chapter this morning, and it was, it's very hard to do positive thinking about things. It's a lot harder. Plus your mind says bullshit, you know, things are great. No, your mind's like, no, things are really shitty. So one of the things that's really interesting anybody could do, just a little nugget I got from just this morning reading it, was don't say stupid shit. Don't say negative things. So they would teach football teams, like, don't say, you know, we're screwed or fucking, you know, if you have something negative to say, just keep your mouth shut. Like, it's something about not about infecting somebody else and bringing them down, but we're constantly hearing ourselves. So if we can, it was the same kind of thing as, like, instead of like eating right or becoming a plant-based or a vegan, whatever you're going to do, just stop eating stupid shit. Like, don't go to McDonald's and don't eat bad. You know, you don't have to eat good. Just don't eat bad. You don't have to do positive thinking. Just don't say out loud. Don't say negative things, man. Keep it just let it go.
Wow, that's huge.
Yeah. Again, it's so funny because you keep just hitting on points of the program. We have a big part on negative self-talk, because that will be what you do. What a lot of people who relapse, that's what happens is, you know, you're doing good and the right things. And then the mind will start saying, yeah, but are you really doing that good? Yeah, but is life really that great? And the negative talk will lead back to relapse. And so it's really important to not only verbalize it, but to try to not give it any weight.
Yeah, and I'm thinking of a bunch of things, you know, I guess in an effort to try to drop as many nuggets as I can. There's one other one that came from, I think, the book Seven Habits, I think is where it came from. And I'm all about expectation. And so it's very interesting because you want to have a positive outlook and a hopeful outlook and expectation. But it's my observation that people, you know, when your expectations are exceeded, you're elated, right? Like if somebody told you, hey, you know, you won, $500, and then it turned out when you went to claim it that they're like, no, it's actually a grand, you'd be like excited. But if they told you that you won $20,000 and they said it's a grand, your expectations are unmet. And so even though you won a grand that you never had, like, you'd be like, what the hell, man? Like, where's the other 19? So it's all about expectations. So one of the things I tell myself a little bit, that I read it in the book, I'm paraphrasing a little bit, is life is difficult. I think it's the first sentence. Starts out, it says, life is difficult. And then it says, when you understand and accept that life is difficult and prepare for it, then life becomes easy. So when you think like shit doesn't go my way, like you have to already be ready. Like, of course it's not going to go your way. You know,
yeah, why would it?
You know, my car broke down. Of course my car broke down. Like, that's how shit is. Like, life is difficult. One of the things is in life, your car breaks down. So, but you're prepared for it and you can overcome it. That's kind of where then everything becomes easy, man. Like, you expect like shit's not going to go. It's hard. It's a hard balance because you really want to have a positive expectation that things are going to go your way. But I guess maybe the thing is like, if it doesn't, like, that's cool too, man. Like, no problem.
And I think that's really important for people new in sobriety, because I think a lot of people come in with the idea that if I just get sober, everything's going to go great in my life. But that's not life. In fact, you've got to prepare that everything's going to still be situations that you have to handle, but you got to go through it sober now. And so I think that's like a huge piece of advice, especially for newly sober people who are expecting everything to be rainbows and sunshine and everything just because they got sober.
yeah, not gonna happen.
Yeah, life is still gonna be life, you just don't get to drink anymore.
Which is a good thing, because then you have to deal with all those side effects.
Yeah, nothing's gonna happen, nothing gets better with drugs or drinking or drugs, that's for sure.
That's true. Yeah, I really like the idea of, I mean, I guess my question for you, besides my question for you, Rob, is when did you start getting into the personal development, self-help, that type of aspect? Because I have a lot of affinity for that. So I'm kind of just curious, when did you start diving into that?
Immediately. That was actually one of the things. Yeah, immediately. So, you know, from like, you know, when I stopped, in fact, you know, I don't have a really dramatic story. I mean, I have some bad stuff. I mean, it's all comparative. It's funny how you go, well, God, my shit, my story's not like that. Like, God, man, you know, like, but it's my opinion that everybody experiences trauma because trauma is subjective, you know, how we process things. But from the very beginning, what I started to do was I never thought like I'm gonna stop drinking. I'm gonna quit drinking. It was for me intentionally, or you know, doing drugs and everything else like that. And I did it pretty much everything except for I never, you know, stuck a needle in my arm. I never did meth or snorted it or anything like that. It's probably one of the other things. But everything else I did, you know, quite honestly, I liked it. I liked it quite a bit too, you know. But the way that it was for me was very much of a non-event. So I kept telling myself, it wasn't that I quit drinking. I became a non-drinker, or I would still go out, not immediately, but after I was comfortable and safe enough with friends. And fortunately I was around good people too, that I would tell people, yeah, I'm the non-drinker. I'm the designated driver. No, I'll have a soda, you know, soda water. And it was just kind of like that. Like I made it not a thing at all. And I gave it no influence and no power other than to reinvent myself as just to say, like, I'm a guy that doesn't do drugs, man. I go to church and I love the Lord. And I don't drink, man. Like, you know, I might drop F-bombs here and there. And, you know, I like women and, you know, stuff like that, whatever it was. But I was like, that's who I am. I started to define it from day one.
I love that, because I think so many people shy away from those places and situations that are going to be triggers for them, because, you know, they're not feeling strong enough to put themselves directly back in the path of where led them into trouble before, like going into a bar and hanging out with your friends and watching them drink and deciding you're going to be the sober one that takes everybody home. That takes a lot of balls, honestly. And I don't think everybody can handle it that way.
Yeah, I just never made it lie like that. One thing I'll add, as long as you ask, you have a big affinity for, you know, human potential and personal development and things like that, is I believe, and what I choose to communicate is that, you know, mental illness, addiction, sobriety, or, you know, everything about it, substance abuse and non-substance abuse, depression, PTSD, I think that actually it comes from an unmet something in your spirit that you feel like you're supposed to do, but maybe you can't even define it. And you have this restlessness inside you, maybe all this noise in your mind that you really can't get over. And so the only thing that kind of makes it go away is to numb it out. And it's my belief that people that suffer, are in recovery, whatever it might be, we have more potential than the normies that are out there. The highlight of depression is that, and I remember the first time I saw a therapist and I said, I think I'm having a nervous breakdown. And she said, no, you've had a nervous breakdown. Like, that's crossed that bridge before already. And I, oh, okay, well, that actually made it okay. Like, now I didn't have to be afraid of it. But the thing was that because you can experience these profound lows, you also have the ability to contrast them and to actually see like how high, and I don't mean from a bipolar perspective, but like, I would rather be able to like fully embrace life. Like, I'm a guy that I want to, I was telling a friend of mine, everybody's been to Disneyland, you know, I think of Anaheim. And, you know, when you walk into Disneyland, you got the coffee shop and you got the gift shop and some stuff like that. You got to walk down the whole thing just before you even get to Pirates of the Caribbean. You got to go down way down there, right? You're looking at the castle out in front. And what I think about with life is, you don't want to be the guy that goes to Disneyland and then just hangs out at the coffee shop right next to the gate the whole time, right? You want to go in and experience everything. And there's danger in there, too. So I'm grateful that I can feel these kind of lows that I feel, because, you know, I can get on Space Mountain and go, that was great, you know, type of a thing. That's kind of the way that I choose to frame this and to give people hope. Like, you got superpowers, man.
I love that. I feel like that's something that we need to teach newly sober people too, is that emotions are okay. Feeling scared, feeling sad, feeling depressed, like negative emotions and positive emotions are all totally fine to feel. You just got to allow yourself to feel it and know that that's okay. And you're feeling that way for a reason, but it doesn't mean you have to go numb it out because all of a sudden you're feeling again.
For sure.
I really like the analogy of Disneyland. And I like the analogy that if we're going to get super low, the reframe is, dude, we're also going to get super high. Like, we're going to be able to bounce back, and that's going to happen too. And it's very limiting to look at the depression, the anxiety, and as just the lows. Like, we got to observe the highs too. So that's kind of what I heard. And I like that because that's the hope, is that it's going to get better. We're going to go back to the top, or the ride is going to lift up at some point too. And some people need that, because they're stuck in the lows.
Yeah, and you get out and chop wood, you know, do whatever you can do, you know. You get out and do the work, chop wood, you know. I have a hard time. A lot of times I'll think to myself, like, I don't feel like doing that. Or I have a lot of anxiety right now. I can't do that right now.
Right.
And, you know, it's one thing if you got a job, you got to be accountable to your boss. But when you're the boss, it's a little bit different. I got people relying on me and things like that. But things can get pushed off. And so the whole idea of doing things that you don't want to do, so you don't have to feel like chopping wood for your fireplace. If you don't, you're going to, you know, freeze your ass off because it's really cold outside. So the things that interesting is that your feelings really actually follow your actions. And so, that's what I think. And that's probably one of the reasons why I like personal development, is it gives me all these kind of these rules, if you will, to live by.
Yeah.
I think that's why exercise fits so good into sobriety as well, because I can't think of many classes where I'm like so excited to go do this awful workout, but I just show up, I put in the work, and 99.999% of the time, I feel so good and so happy afterwards and glad I did it. But if I let my mind talk myself out of it, I would never get totally those good feelings.
Totally, totally, totally. I used to always hate. Now, I don't think I hate it that much, but like I would hate going to work out. I think I just hate it. And then once I did work out, my wife and I were doing, before the pandemic shut down, we did Orange Theory. And I like Orange Theory. I think Orange Theory is like CrossFit 2.0. Yeah. Orange Theory is kick ass, actually. I used to think it was for soccer moms, but like it's really, really legit. Or it was, if it ever comes back. But we would go and do it, and I always just dreaded going because it's a hard workout. But you know, I felt great after I was done, and that those endorphins went for like another day, you know, or so. So it's good stuff, man.
Yeah, I think it's funny because, oh, sorry, Dan. Mm-hmm. When you're first starting to work out, that's all you think about is how bad you're going to feel or how much you hate it. And then after you've been like, you've developed that habit, you don't think about the bad. You're already thinking about how good you're going to feel. So it helps you just show up because now you've really drilled in that habit where you're thinking about the good part of it instead of looking at the bad part of how it's going to be.
Yeah, and it's one of those goal accomplished kind of things too.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, the dopamine, the discipline, the feelings come after the work.
That's yeah.
That's a deal. I love that. Rob, my big question for you that I've been dying to ask you is, how cool is it, or not cool, I guess it's your opinion, but talking to Matt Frazier, I wanted to know about that.
Yeah, I loved Matt Frazier. And I love Matt Frazier. He is cool as hell. And I forgot how many years he's got, but it's a lot. It's like 15 or something like that. It's a lot. And you know, he's superhuman, but he also is really super legit in recovery. I think he's got the Serenity Prayer actually tattooed on his arm. I'm not, you know, outing him because it's out publicly and then from our interview and stuff like that too.
Right.
But, his dad, you know, he was talking about when he was a little kid and, you know, his dad would, he'd finish dinner and his dad would go to a meeting. And so he just thought everybody's dad went to a meeting on Thursday night or something like that. You know, he did. And so, he was introduced to it at a young age and, the guy's really, really cool. You know, a million super hyper focused on CrossFit. And he has just an amazing, you know, rabid following. You know, CrossFit's a freaking cult. No, I'm just kidding. It's not really a cult.
But, I mean, it's kind of a cult, though.
Yeah, it's okay. I think it's okay to be. It's okay to be in a cult if they're not branding you or selling you or something like that. But anyhow, Nexium.
Nexium, yeah. The vowel.
But yeah, I think that it's he's a really, really cool guy. And he does a lot of good for people that's out there. And I think he's going to be the champ, you know, for several more years, I think.
Oh, yeah. He's so light years ahead of even second place, for sure. Yeah, he just took his fifth, and he's so far ahead of everybody. And I thought, God, I would hate to have to compete against him, because you know you're going to give it your all, and you're still going to be so far behind.
Yeah, who would have thought, though? You know, like, I think it was Froning. Isn't that what it is? Froning? Is that what it is? That
Froning.
Froning. Sorry. Yeah. That nobody thought it could be him, but I, you know, he's the next level. So, you know, it'll be a pretty tall mountain for somebody to climb over with Matt.
Absolutely.
Yeah, if they ever get there. I think
he trains all day. Like, he trains like all day long too. It's actually like, he doesn't just do like a CrossFit WOD. Like, he trains all day.
It's a full-time job. He puts in 8+ hours.
Yeah. Yeah, training. Yep.
Yeah, I think he said he does like 3.5 hour sessions, some lunch, and then hits another 3.5 session.
Yeah.
Which is great. That sounds like my work schedule.
Well, it is his job, and he's really good at it.
Yeah.
Rob, my question for you is, how is it working with your brother? Sometimes being familial connections in a workplace, it's not always optimum, but you guys have a great relationship and able to
we've had a great relationship ever since, you know, my brother was like 17, you know, and I was a little kid, he used to just beat the shit out of me. And now it would be like abuse kind of stuff. Back then they just say, well, yeah, that's what older brothers would do to younger brothers.
That's his family. Yeah.
So when he's older, you can beat him and it'll be elder abuse.
Yeah, right. Exactly. But, you know, he was the best man at my wedding. You know, he's the way that I would, it's been great to answer the question. The way that I would describe him, I have called him Forrest Gump for many years, and you got to kind of almost read the Forrest Gump book to really understand it, because the movies always only touch on a little bit of the book. But Forrest Gump, like, did so many, reinvented him. He was an astronaut in the book, he was an astronaut, and then he was like a grandmaster chess champion, and he had all, then he was hooked up with Raquel Welch, and he was this and he was this. And so that's been my brother's life. Like, he's got like 50 lifetimes compressed into one. I don't know of anybody that has had more kind of different amazing life experiences. You know, he'll text me and he said, yeah, I'm going over to Stevie Wonder's for dinner, you know, send me a, you know, text, stuff like that. Like, stuff that would be a high point for, and it's just a constant kind of a thing. Or the recurring story with him all the time was people saying to him, I don't know why I'm doing this, I don't ever do this. And then they'd give him some kind of a painting, or they do some, it was like, I don't know why I'm doing this, I've never done this. And then he's got a bazillion stories of those kind of stories. So it's been, you know, really, really great.
That's cool. And I love that you guys are able to work together and get along good and create amazing things together with this magazine.
Yeah.
Yeah, this magazine's awesome. I guess, you know, a big question that I had too, or just kind of something I'm curious about, Rob, is I think I know you're pretty big into 12 steps. That's kind of like the direction of the magazine, maybe. And I love 12 steps. I'm not like a 12 step hater. I don't go to as much meetings as I used to anymore. But at Elevate, our program, we're definitely a little bit more holistic, kind of 12 step alternative. And I kind of want to get your opinion on that and what you see about that.
Yeah, it's a great question. And the, you know, the whole kind of bent, if you will, of recovery today, most all the content is 12-step type of content, most all the contributors and things like that. And I would probably say to anybody, you know, if I was asking like a very vanilla, I mean, recovery is very personal, but if I was going to give a generic vanilla answer, I would say, you know, 12 step. But it's not that way. And recovery is very, you know, individualized to everybody. So what my opinion is, and thus the magazine, even though we kind of have a bent, that is, I don't care. I don't care how you get sober. I don't care if it's faith based. We've had people on that said, you know, I was a total addict and Jesus completely freed me of everything.
Yeah.
Cool.
Right on.
I did this or I did something else, or I was not 12-step. 12-step didn't work for me. Cool. My whole philosophy has been, I really don't care. As long as you are happy and you're productive and those that are around you are also happy and they're also would agree that it's not just a delusion that you're productive, you know, however you got there is what it should be. So I think that one of the things I love about, you know, a 12-step program though is like things like having a sponsor. Like everybody should have some kind of a person that is a mentor, you know, to them.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I think that one of the things I like, you know, kind of bigger picture life-wise is taking negative things and then being able to understand things that happen that are bad or traumatic or something and then surviving them so that you can actually give confidence to somebody else that's going through it right now. It gives meaning and purpose to things that are pretty bad happening, you know, in our own lives. So there's a lot of great elements, you know, to it, but I really don't care whether it's 12-step or it's non-12-step or it's faith-based or it doesn't matter. As long as you're happy and it's working for you and the people around you would agree that it's working for you, cool, roll with it.
What the hell, yeah.
Yeah, we are definitely of the same belief. We're not haters or anti anything. If it gets you sober, we are 100% all for it. And I think, you know, as programs and modalities, we should all support each other in that way. It doesn't matter how you get there as long as you're there.
If it's working for you, you know, you know, keep doing it. It's, you know, it might almost sound like, well, what do you need to do to, you know, lose weight or get in shape or something like that? I mean, there's a lot of different paths that you could do. And so, you know, whatever is working for you and you like it and everybody around you would agree, then good, keep doing it.
So I would love to ask you who your favorite person to podcast with or interview with is, but I think you've been asked that a lot. And I know it's like picking your favorite child, so I'm not going to put you in that position.
It's kind of almost like I'll try to answer it, but I'll answer it this way by saying it's kind of like almost, you know, who's the most recent. And, you know, that's kind of the way that I would answer it because it's what's freshest in your mind. I used to kind of feel bad saying that, you know, this is our best issue, but like it is because it's like, what's first of all, every issue we try to make better of the magazine. But then it's also most recent in my mind. It's not like, oh yeah, you're not as good as this person back here or anything like that. But, you know, there's a lot of high points, you know, that we've had a lot of amazing experiences to be able to share in conversations that go much deeper. You know, the frame of the conversation would normally be, can I get a selfie? And instead I get to ask, like, have you ever thought about killing yourself? Or, you know, what's your, you know, the shit you don't tell people, you know?
Anybody you interviewed that you really just fanboyed over?
Yeah, many, many, many. So, in this next coming issue, God, there's so many that are so awesome. One guy that stands out is this guy. His name's Victor Marx, and he is the actually supports what I just said because he's like the most recent. You know, he's the world's fastest gun disarm. So he's got a YouTube video where a guy's pointing a gun at him, and then he goes like that. And within, I think it's 0.28 seconds, he's taking the gun away and taking it out. So the guy's like a manly man. And he goes, travels around the world and he saves children. A lot of it's like from like ISIS, which is really kind of wild. He's incredibly faith-based. He's been married to his only wife for 30 something years. He just, you know, really, really cool guy. So he's somebody that I was like, wow, man. You know, Nikki Six was really amazing on the whole other side of the spectrum. And Nikki Six was like, God, this guy's like Yoda. He's so wise about things. And there's a lot where I my line to a lot of these guys that I would say I fall in love with them in an interview, and I'm like, man, Tony Mandrich, you know, shout out to him. I love Tony Mandrich. I was like, dude, like, if we lived near each other, we barbecue together, man. Like Dave Dahl, the guy that invented Dave's Killer Bread, man, has become a friend, you know. So it's really pretty wild now that these guys like are like my legit friends, you know. Russell Saraski, I like, you know, there's a lot of course, Jennifer and Tim, I just adore them. I feel like they're, you know, family. So there's so many. Donna, as you mentioned, if I didn't already say that. So many.
That's awesome. What a great job for you. I think it's amazing. Definitely envious. I love all those people.
Yeah, they're the really, really, really cool, people, man. It is something I'm very grateful for, and I just want it to be, you know, bigger. And also, you know, we've talked to a lot of celebrities, actors and things like that, and I'm really grateful for that. But, you know, now I kind of want to find people that are, you know, other places. The reason is I want to find an influencer that's the biggest influencer that can help us push this message out to as many people as possible. And then also to attract the next biggest influencer to go, oh, wow, you've had so-and-so, like, okay, you know, legit. But, you know, that's kind of where things are. And yeah, I'm grateful for it.
That was interesting you brought that up, because that was going to be my next question, is what's on the horizon for you? Is there something new and different, or more of what you're doing? And
yeah, there's a lot more that's on the horizon. In fact, it's funny, I always like to be early to things. So I'm usually an early adopter in, you know, most anything. And it's interesting actually being a guest on your podcast. A lot of times I would describe Recovery Today as I would say it's a podcast. It's kind of like a podcast. It's a multimedia digital magazine surrounded by content and things like that. But we've actually never had a podcast at all. So one of our covers, his name is Mike Diamond. So he, oh God, actually, if I think about like who is amazing or who I have like a crush on, however you're going to say it, would be Mike Diamond. Like it was this immediate, profound. And then the guy is as legit as you can be. Like he's like, I'll help you. I'll do this. I'll do that. Let's do a podcast together. So I've been asked a million times to do a podcast. And so with him, I did. And this guy does what he says. So we're going to drop we've got a whole season, the first season that's done. It's never been published in the magazine at all. It'll be separate from the magazine, lead people back to the magazine. But we've got 10 different episodes with some really influential and cool and different people. My new friend Charlie Smith, I told you, gave me the book. You know, shout out to him. That guy is amazing. So that's what's new on the horizon for us. And just to, you know, keep things going, we've got some great covers that are planned all the way through January right now.
Damn, right on. Well, I definitely look forward to listening to the podcast and the new covers. And yeah, I kind of want to know too, how could we support Recovery Today? Like, you know, maybe as a company or as a podcast or as a human, is there anything we could do to help keep Recovery Today?
Yeah, thank you for asking. You know, we're a free magazine, and it takes a lot of work. That much I will say. You know, I'm grateful to have everybody around, but I will say, you know, it's a lot of work that we all do. It's an enormous amount of work that I do in it, and so I appreciate. We don't run any advertising to increase our subscribers. So since we're a digital magazine, you can share it. So you can promote it. You can share it. You can share us that's out there. We're kind of almost, I don't want to say competitors, but we're overlapping because we're content creators as well. So, you know, I would always say like, hey, if you know, I always tell, there's three things I always tell people. Number one, I'm looking for to increase our subscriber base. Number two, I'm looking for the next big influential people. And then we're also monetized actually through advertising. So I'm always looking for people that are actually wanting to get their message that's out there. But the big thing I would say that you could probably do is you're already doing it right now. Anybody that's hearing this or seeing this, they can go to, if I plug it, recoverytodaymagazine.com. And all that you do is, you know, put in your name and your email. The best way to look at Recovery Today is in our mobile app. That's actually, it's in the, we'll redirect you over to our download page where you have access to the Google link in the Google Play Store, the magazine rack, and also into Apple. And every single issue is completely free. So if you like it, if there's something that resonates with you, whomever might be watching this, you or anybody like that, is post it, share it, man. Like, that's the only way. It's all, it has grown entirely organically. And unfortunately, we're not going to run out of sick people. You know, we're just not going to run out
of business.
Yeah. And that's kind of how, a little bit, even with content creators, I used to look at it like, you know, hey, I don't really want to do this because you're kind of in the same lane as me. But there's, you know, there's there's an ocean
for all of us.
There's an ocean of sick people, man, you know, and the whole goal is like, we want to help people out. So, yeah, how can we do things together? You know, I don't know, anything that we can, you know, how we're doing the same kind of thing. So, I appreciate the question.
Yeah, of course. No, that's huge. We love to help and support in any way we can. And dude, the magazine's badass. I'm going to continue to share it.
I love that you can access all the magazines from the beginning. So it's not like just the recent episode. It is amazing to me that I can scroll all the way back and go to my favorite Dave Navarro one or Nikki Sixx and read them. And, you know, it doesn't get old. It's not like it's outdated information. It's always relevant.
No, and it's always great. And I know I don't want to sound self-promotion. It's promoting it all, because I wonder quite often, like, I'm inside the forest. And so, can I really see it? And I like to think that I'm a smart guy. You know, I got a degree in engineering, so I was able to accomplish something. And I love to write and I love to communicate. And I find oftentimes I get these kind of these mile markers where I can kind of sink an, or an anchor where I have somebody that I really like and respect, like you guys. You know, you're 26 years and 6 years. You're really awesome people yourself. And to kind of have this, not so much an affirmation like, oh God, but like, it's like legit. So I've had really other amazing people like yourselves, you know, just like, you know, fawn over it and go, God, like, this is so, I just want to have, and then it makes me go like, God, it's not just me. Like, it is really good. Like, it's actually good stuff. I'm grateful that something that could come out of here or come out of an experience like this could be of a benefit to somebody else. And to go like, that was good shit with the podcast. I just recently gave it to Mike, and we've gone through, we're editing in it. We're doing all this kind of stuff. And I was telling him, as I'm listening to some of this, I'm like, damn, dude, like, this is so good. Like, and I'm thinking like, I don't even know, like, you don't want to fall in love with your own stuff. He went and started going through a bunch of them because he hasn't. And it's all still in the can right now. And it's the same thing. Like, no, dude, like, it's really good. So I'm grateful.
Awesome. Well, and you're in such a perfect medium to help people. I know for us, that's our passion and purpose in life. And I feel like that is yours as well. And so I'm really glad you're there, able to help millions of people by your magazine and the people you interview and how you help.
Yeah, thank you very much. Yeah, the feeling is mutual. I say the same thing back to you. Anybody that's part of the cause or with a passion to help anybody else, you know, my hat is off. A big shout out to you and everything that you're doing. And it comes from a place of, you know, wanting to help people. Like, how cool is it to be able to make a living and also be able to help people at the same time?
It's the coolest.
It's the best thing in the world.
Yeah. Best thing that's ever happened to me.
Well, I appreciate you guys having me on. And, you know, this is, you know, 1 in 100. It's usually me doing the interviewing. So it's nice to, you know, kind of share some of my thoughts and answer some questions as well. So thanks for inviting me.
Thanks for being here. Any final thoughts you want to share with our listeners?
You know, no, not really, other than like, you know, just I like the phrase, like, one day at a time, man. You know, sun's going to come out tomorrow. If you're freaking out and tripping out, you know, things will get better. Call, you know, talk to a friend. You're valuable. Those are probably some of the things that I would say. Like, I don't know you, but like, you're valuable, and you have purpose. I think that as a Christian, I think that everybody's created in God's image and likeness. And you have great potential within you that is unrealized, and it's only actually just based on you taking the next step. So anything that I can do to encourage anybody at all, that's what I think that I, what my purpose is.
Appreciate that so much. Thank you.
Yeah, that was amazing. It's been great talking to you, Rob. Thanks for being on the show. And
thanks, guys.
We can connect in the future. And
love to.
I'm going to continue digesting recovery today and sharing it with the world and stay sober along the way.
Nice.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you found some value from listening. And if you did, please share with someone you know or love. You can find us on social media. We are at Elevate Addiction Services.
And if you or a loved one are struggling with addiction, please call our toll-free, confidential 24-hour helpline at 833-33-SOBER or visit our website at elevaterehab.org.